is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight, our NBA episode, we're going to jump around the association for a variety of topics. We're going to start, though, with the news that today, Los Angeles Lakers forward Anthony Davis declined a max contract extension from the Lakers. Jay, thoughts?
Reports are that it doesn't really seem to mean anything, that he's more than likely staying. But I just think it's interesting that, I mean, like, if he's going to stay, why even, like, chance this becoming an issue? I don't think it's going to be an issue because I think he's probably going to end up staying, but why is he declining? Is there a benefit to him declining it, Mike?
I believe there is. I think that when he declines the extension, I think the extension would give him less years, and I think he can also make more money over the total length of the contract if he opts out. So I think there is a financial benefit, and there also could, if he wanted to sign a max length deal, I think he could also signed for more years in a new contract. But if, again, we all know how these things go, that right now what seems like a very happy marriage between LeBron and Anthony Davis and the Lakers, we know that very, very quickly, should the results, whether it be in the regular season or eventually into the playoffs, if those things go south, that suddenly, if he hasn't signed the extension and he's going into free agency and there are some doubts, things can get said, stuff can be miscommunicated, and all of a sudden, what looked like the perfect scenario suddenly has him thinking about going out of town. And so I think you're right in that it probably doesn't matter. I think probably he's going to come back, but I don't think we can truly know what's going to happen until we see how this team performs in the playoffs, because it's nice that they're at the top of the Western Conference through, you know, we're getting close to the halfway point of the season, but that doesn't really, I mean, it means nothing. LeBron doesn't, not that he doesn't want to win in the regular season, but it doesn't really matter. What ultimately matters is how they perform in the playoffs. And so if I'm a Lakers fan, you know, I'm 5% nervous. Whereas if he signs the extension, I'm feeling, you know, all that nerves that he might potentially go away are not there anymore. So I think it doesn't mean much, no, but does it mean something? I think it has to mean something. There's some percentage that the door has been cracked open, that if things don't go well, that he could potentially leave. And I don't know what his, did you read his statement or anything that came out with that?
No,
I don't think there was. I don't know if there was one.
I think this is a report. I don't even think it was officially confirmed that he had done it. It was just a report.
Okay. So, you know, again, depending on what was said or what Anthony Davis, what a statement that might accompany that eventually when he officially
turns it down. Someone's going to ask him the question after the game tonight, right? I mean, someone's going to have to ask him why he's doing
it. You would have to think so. I mean, you would certainly have to think so. I don't know how you would go through any type of press conference unless he doesn't come out and, you know, he's in the locker room and slinks off. Who knows? But, yeah, somebody's going to ask him, and I'm sure that the answer is going to be the pat answer that is always given. You know, we're focusing on the season right now. I'm not worried about what's going to happen in free agency. But still, if I'm a Lakers fan, I feel at least a slight bit of unease that, you know, he manipulated his way to the Lakers, and now, half a year in, he's not going to sign an extension. And again, I get it. I'm sure, contractual benefits for him not doing that. But still, as a Lakers fan, it would make me at least slightly nervous that the door has been cracked open, that he might not return.
Yeah. So on unrelated Lakers notes, what is Kyle Kuzma doing to his hair? Did you see that he's bleached his hair?
Let me see if I can pull up a current photo of our friend Kyle Kuzma.
Well, if you put the game on real quick, Mike, he's currently in the game, and he literally looks like Justin Timberlake back in the late 90s, early 2000s with his bleach blonde hair situation. Like, it's not like, it's just, I don't exactly know what you, I don't just don't know what he's doing to his hair.
Mike. All right, I got it. It's a good look. That's a good look for Kuzma. I like it.
And then did you see Dwight Howard's participating in the slam dunk contest?
I did not see that. Did they announce the field for the dunk contest?
He's the only one that's been confirmed.
Okay, well, all right. Dwight's been in it before to critical acclaim.
Yeah, so.
Superman, you know, is he bringing the cape?
I don't know. You got to think that he's going to try to involve LeBron or something, right?
You would have to think so. I mean, I don't know. That's one of the biggest shames of LeBron's career. He never participated in a slam dunk.
He did the skill challenge thing, didn't he? Or is that no? It was Kyrie. Kyrie did the skill challenge thing.
I don't know. But, I don't know if LeBron. I don't think LeBron has ever participated in anything on All-Star Saturday night. But you just think about how iconic the Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, Larry Nance, Dr. J, how iconic those slam dunk contests were, and the fact that we never got to see LeBron in one is just, it's crazy. And then now you wonder if Zion gets back healthy. I doubt he's going to be in this year's, but at some point does he participate? I think the older he gets, the longer he's in the league, the less likely it is that he's going to be willing to get out there and do it. So
I think there's a zero chance he ever participates in the slam dunk contest. Because he hasn't done it by now, Mike, he is not going to do it.
You mean LeBron?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. LeBron's done. He's never – no, LeBron, that ship has sailed a long time ago. But I think –
well, when you said getting older, I assumed you meant LeBron. But
No, I meant Zion. I think if Zion's in the league too, you know, let's say that he doesn't come back this year until after the All-Star game, or even if he comes back prior to the All-Star game, I don't think they're probably going to throw him out there in a slam dunk contest.
No, I don't think so.
So now you're going into his second year. If he doesn't do it in his second year, I mean – At some point, it's just like that ship has sailed and he's gone. He's never going to do it. So
Do you know who I think would be a good slam dunk contest player? I think they tried to put Sexton in the slam dunk contest because he thought he could dunk from the free throw line tonight, Mike. Over Andre Drummond.
Well, you know, what can I tell you? Andre Drummond's not known for his rim protection, so maybe Colin Sexton thought he was, you know, he thought he was attacking a 6'2 guy.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right, so yeah, I think we're done talking Lakers. Let's shift.
All right,
to
one more thing. Oh, do you think they're going to odds of them trading Kyle Kuzma? What are the odds that come?
Well, I mean,
February
with his haircut,
20th?
I would definitely trade him. It's a bad look, but I don't know if a team's going to be like, I don't know. I think they're going to. I don't think Kuzma gets traded. I mean. I don't think his contract makes enough money to get something of value that's going to really tip the scale for the Lakers.
Right. There's nobody that I see that would make sense that's in that same price range. I mean, I guess, I don't know, could you throw KCP in there? And so you trade KCP and Kuzma for something. But is that something you're getting back?
He's a clutch client. He's not getting traded, Mike.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get traded either. But it'll be interesting to see what the Lakers try to pull off as we head what the rumors are as we head towards the trading deadline. But I agree with you. I think there's probably, I'd say there's at least an 80% chance that he stays on the Lakers, and maybe about a 20% chance that he goes. It depends, I guess, on how Davis and LeBron feel about him as a teammate and what he can ultimately bring to the table. That's what's going to determine yep. whether or not they ship him out. If they feel like he's a valuable cog in what they're trying to do, then he'll stay. And if they don't, then they'll probably try to figure out a way to move him, even if the value back is, you know, minimal.
Yeah. All right. So 76ers and the malcontent between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I'm going to start talking about Joel Embiid's beautiful finger from last night. That was pretty awesomely looking gross, grotesque, just kind of, I mean, I think, I can't speak for you, Mike, but I'm pretty sure most basketball players at some point in their life have had their finger dislocated. Have you ever had a finger dislocated?
I've never had a dislocated finger. I have seen it happen numerous times to other people. I know I had one time a guy asked me to pull his finger back into position. This was like a pickup game. A guy I didn't know, and he got hit with the ball, and all of a sudden he's screaming at me, pull my finger out, pull my finger out. It's dislocated. I'm like, dude, man, I'm not a doctor. I'm not pulling. I'm not yanking on your finger and trying to get that thing to go back in the socket. You got to go talk to somebody you know or get to the hospital. But no, I've never experienced that. So,
let me just tell you from personal experience, because about two falls ago I was playing and my left ring finger, luckily I didn't have my ring on. My left ring finger dislocated and was like pointing at a 45-degree angle. It was pretty gross, and I popped it back in and kept playing. It was pretty gross.
That's impressive. That's impressive. That's very impressive.
Just, I know this is live, and we're doing this live, but Bobby Portis just literally sideswiped Caldwell Pope in the head, and they almost had a bench-clearing brawl, Mike.
Fun.
But Bobby Portis has a bad record of this kind of behavior.
Yes, he does. He sent Nikola Mirotic fleeing to another country to avoid playing with him and getting punched. That is true.
I'm assuming they've assessed him a flagrant 2 or 1. We'll find out in a minute here. But anyways, I think going back to the 76ers, I definitely think that there's some issues going on between Embiid and Simmons. I don't know that anyone's going to get traded. I don't know. He got ejected. Bobby Portis ejected. I think Embiid is not going to move anywhere. I think if you're going to move anyone, it's Simmons, because you probably can get some good stuff to complement what they've got going on there. And I just don't think you trade Embiid. I think he's too much of a Philly loves him. The city of Philadelphia loves him, and I don't know that I feel that the city of Philadelphia loves Ben Simmons.
It definitely seems like Embiid has the pulse of the city and that it's Embiid's team ultimately. Philly's, we've talked about them numerous times over the course of the season so far, but I think back to just a week ago when we were doing the New Year's resolutions pod and kind of reviewing the Christmas game. And, you know, that was when Philly, I think that when they beat Milwaukee there on Christmas Day, like that's the apex alpha dog version of that Philly team and what it can be, where they're just stifling on defense. And they get enough shooting that they can open up space for Simmons to drive. They can open up room for the Embiid post-ups. And that's ultimately the ideal scenario for what the Philadelphia 76ers could look like. And then, of course, they turned around and lost 4 games in a row before they won last night or the night. I guess it was last night. So, and then Embiid came out with the the quote that, you know, we need guys to take shots when they're open, and that helps space the floor and helps everybody out, which was clearly directed at Simmons. And then Brett Brown came out with a similar comment, you know, that, you know, we need this guy to shoot. And it's interesting, you know, if you had a chance to inject Ben Simmons with truth serum and try to figure out what's going on in his mind, why he won't shoot the ball from out there. And I know he's not a good shooter just in general. And there's the whole, does he shoot with the correct hand because of how he finishes inside the lane and this and that. But the reality is I mean, this is a 6'10", supremely gifted, athletic dude. You can't tell me that he can't find a way to practice jacking up some three-point shots just to be able to have it be a threat that he can get it up there. I mean, is it stubbornness? Is it being unwilling to look silly or bad because he's not going to shoot a good percentage? Is it in his mind that he thinks, well, I'm not very good at him, so why should I shoot him? I'm hurting the team. You know, I don't know what the real honest answer inside of Ben Simmons' mind would be, but it's clear that it's difficult when you look at that team and you try to figure out what they are, especially when it comes to their offensive identity in the playoffs, when teams can game plan and they start backing off Simmons and they're doubling Embiid and shots aren't going down. Philly, again, I think Philly is a lot like Milwaukee, and from that standpoint is the things that they do well in the regular season, I'm not sure that they're 100% transferable to what happens in playoff basketball. And
you mean
so
they're
as
not going
to
hit 23 threes in a game against...
Well, I don't even mean that. I just mean the way that they, you know, what do you do with Simmons? I mean, I think you can game plan if you're an opponent of the Sixers. You can game plan to sag off Simmons, to be able to do things that can make life very difficult for the Philly offense. And then to take it one step further, last year when that happened, what was the plan? Give it to Jimmy Butler and let Jimmy create. And he kind of became the de facto end of game scoring option when everything breaks down. And Jimmy Butler is very, very good. He's one step below the superstar guy that is really going to be able to carry you past a quality opponent by themselves. I mean, I don't think Jimmy Butler's on that level, but certainly for Philly, he was better than anybody else they had. And so Simmons clearly isn't going to be that guy. So the question is, in a playoff series, in a game six or a game seven, where Philly needs a guy to carry the offense for 4 minutes because everybody else freezes up, is Embiid at the level where you can count on him 95% of the time to come through in that situation? I think his history to this point would say no, he's not. Now again, until it happens, you know, yeah, of course it hasn't happened, and until it does, people are going to continue to question it. But I think that long term, you know, the question, can you get value for Ben Simmons if you're Philly and you trade him? What do you get back that is going to be of equal or at least close to equal value that fits better around Embiid?
I think the Chris Paul thought is gone. If there was ever a thought that they were talking like making a Chris Paul trade, I don't think Oklahoma City is going to do that, Mike. I think their best option, legitimately, I don't know. We'll go on record. I think we've said this a few times. I don't understand the whole contract, how it all works. I know it's like 70. They have to be matching, but they can be like 75% difference or something. I don't exactly know it. I'm not going to profess that I know it. But I think the only option that Philly could really somehow work it out, if it could, would... I still think Jrue Holiday has got to be a consideration. Like, New Orleans isn't going to be in the playoffs. Okay. And I think it would be intriguing for New Orleans to put Ben Simmons and Zion together. I think that would be kind of, you know, an interesting situation. And is there a chance that Philly could trade back for J.J. Redick? Maybe forget Jrue Holiday, get J.J. Redick back. Is that a possibility? Because I have to imagine that Griffin's going to trade J.J. Redick here before the trade deadline and to a contender, because I think that would be the only right thing. And we got to keep the J.J. Redick playoff streak alive.
All right, so two things there. One is, if Philly were to trade for Redick, you're back into, and again, I'm not saying they wouldn't do it, but you're back into the same situation where teams try to hunt and find Redick in the playoffs, and he becomes their weak link. Like right now, they can throw out a lineup where there is no weak link defensively, and they can just be monstrous on the defensive end of the floor from a size standpoint, from a switchability standpoint. They can be very, very difficult to score against. So their question is, how much of that defense are they willing to give up to bolster their offense? And I'm not sure there's really anything out there for them that solves it. Yeah, they could use a shooter, but they probably need a shooter who's a better defender to kind of double down on what they're really good at and maybe boost up the shooting maybe a little less than what Redick could. Yep. Again, I don't know. I don't know who that player is, but I'm not sure if I was Philly that I would trade for Redick. And then the second point of that is, you know, New Orleans, they're second to last in the Western Conference, so they're number 14 in the West, and yet they're only four games out, and they're 6-4 in their last 10. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility, like we talked about before, that if Zion comes back and he's as good as everyone thinks he is, that they can't creep up into... I mean, the Spurs right now are in the 8th spot at 15-20, so it's not like that 8th spot is not going to be filled by a juggernaut team. I mean, I would guess, based on where we are right now, that whoever gets that 8th seed is going to probably be a below 500 team. Is probably the way it's looking. Is, I mean,
at best, maybe, they're going to be 500. I mean, really,
right.
Really.
Maybe you get to, you know, maybe they get to 41-41. Maybe you get to 42-20 if one of these teams gets hot. But I look at that whole bottom of the Western Conference, and I don't necessarily see anybody who is going to run off 10 wins in a row and suddenly get well above 500. I just don't see it. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is, New Orleans is one of those teams that, you know, we talked about it a little bit before the podcast, which teams are going to be buyers and which teams are going to be sellers, who's punting on the season and trying to deal some veterans for future assets, and who's going to try
Cavs,
to go
Cavs,
out.
Cavs.
Let's hope so. I mean, let's hope so. Let's hope that that happens sooner rather than later. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I don't know. What direction does New Orleans go? Because in theory, I know Zion's timeline is, you know, he's a 19-year-old kid, and Jrue Holiday's probably 28, maybe 29. And so do they really fit exactly? No. But if Zion is as good as advertised, he plays the rest of this year, he comes back next year in his sophomore season. Ingram has obviously taken a huge leap this year, which, you know, we've talked about and chronicled before. Do you really – does trading Jrue Holiday really make you appreciably better? You know, again, I guess it depends on what you get and who the draft picks are. But if I was New Orleans, I wouldn't be that quick to dismantle this roster before I see Zion out on the floor. That's how I would handle it. But again, David Griffin may be thinking completely different.
I think JJ is gone, though. I don't think they hold on to him, because he signed a 2-year deal. Like, what? I know they have him there for veteran presence, but I have a feeling that he's going to be gone. I just think someone's going to make an offer for him, and he'll end up somewhere. That's just my prediction.
That's fair. I just wonder, again, I wonder if it's a complete philosophy of, hey, we're punting on the season, where all these guys are open for business, or are they just saying, hey, we put this roster together with the idea that these were the guys we wanted to surround Zion with, and until we see Zion in uniform, let's just hold on to him and see what we have, and maybe we make a run up into the... Because they already have them and Oklahoma City are sitting there with a huge, you know, barrel full of future assets. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, you can never have too many assets, but at a certain point, I also think there's value that if Zion comes back and they start winning, I think there's also value to being in a winning environment as opposed to a losing environment as a young player. I think that matters. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
All right. Speaking of interesting to see what they're going to do, it's time to move to the Cavaliers, Mike. and the story, the Kevin Love thing. Now, I want to be... I'm not quite buying into everything that's supposedly happened. I don't know that everything
from whose point of view.
I don't think that Kevin was that upset with teammates. It's the way that was being painted. I don't think that's the case. I you and I kind of been texting back and forth and talking about this. So I guess we should start back to like what happened to kind of lead into what's going on now. So I think it was the game at Toronto. Kevin Love got upset and was punching the chair. The Cavs fine him $1,000 for it. And then after that, I guess he had a bit of a blow up with Kobe Altman saying, supposedly. Now, once again, no one is, nothing from the Cavs or anyone has come out. This was a report. I don't even remember who reported it.
That was supposedly at the practice facility, correct?
Yeah, it was the practice facility. He said, go ahead and fine me $1,000. I have plenty of money. That was Shams reporting that. Now, my thought is maybe the Cavs didn't want this to get out because they're trying to trade him, and this could be deemed as bad, like, you know, bad press for someone you're trying to trade. I don't know. But no one ever confirmed. I mean, I know Kevin Love today in a press conference during shoot around said, you know, I kind of, to not swear on the podcast, he said he effed up and he needed to own for
stop
not,
stop not, behaving like a 13-year-old. Like a,
yeah, basically is what he said. And which, you know, who knows if the team kind of told him you need to say something or if that was his PR people or whatever. But, you know, I could understand his frustration but at the same time, he signed a long-term contract. And from the Windhorse report, I don't know if you saw the Windhorse report that went out yesterday. Windhorse said, you know, the big anchor is the last 3 years on his contract. They feel like the Cavs are overvaluing him, and are expecting too much. They're trying to trade, in the Cavs' eyes, at least what other teams are saying is, the Cavs are trying to trade a quote unquote all star player when he's not quite performing at all star levels currently.
All right, so here's my take on the whole situation. One, I think this whole thing, regardless of the reasons behind it, who it was directed at, has made Kevin Love look really bad, I think. Regardless of whether that was directed at Kobe Altman, at John Beilein, when you walk out and you're waving your arms to get the ball from your teammate and then you just turn and fire it 90 miles an hour at another teammate's ankles, yep. It's hard not to believe that in some way, shape, or form that you're taking that you're directing that towards your fellow players. Now, if that's directed at the GM or the coach, it seems like involving the other players in that way kind of shows them up. And that to me just makes Kevin Love look bad. And so that's number one. I think number two, in terms of the value of Kevin Love, I think the Cavs are probably correct in trying to solicit offers for what they believe is an all-star player. But the reality is that the market's only going to bear what the market's going to bear. And so the Cavs can claim that he's an all-star all they want, and they can say that this is his value. And ultimately, his value is whatever somebody's willing to give up for him. And so the Cavs are either going to come to the realization that they can't get as much as they thought, or they just keep him. And if they don't feel like whatever trade packages that are put in front of them are worth it, then they just don't trade him. And so I don't know. I think what's going to happen is they're going to get him out the door, because especially when you think about the guys that they're trying to build around, from Sexton to Garland to Kevin Porter Jr., those are the guys that they're trying to build around. And if Love is upset, if he's complaining, if he's having these public tantrums, it doesn't look good. It doesn't reflect well on the leadership within the locker room of that team. And already you have guys that, you know, in the case of Chetty and Colin Sexton, they've lost now for the last, you know, this year, and they're obviously going to lose. You know, they lost a lot last year. Garland is now in a losing situation. Kevin Porter's in a losing situation. So not only do you have a losing situation, but then you also have a guy who, in theory, should be one of your veteran leaders, who's quite honestly not setting the best example. At least that's the way it appears from the outside. Now, again, on the interior, maybe the story is different than what the perception is, but from what I see, it doesn't seem like Kevin Love is the kind of guy right now that is leading that locker room in a positive direction. So if you're the Cavs, it seems like you'd want to ship him out as fast as you can and get whatever you can for it and just cut bait.
Yeah, so tonight, I know you didn't watch any of the game tonight. So Kevin Love played fantastic tonight. He was 12 of 15 shooting, 12 of 15 shooting, 4 of 6 from behind the three-point line. He had 30 points with 4 minutes to go, Mike. The Cavs were up by like 6 or 7. He took 0 shots the rest of the game. Garland, Sexton just started jacking up terrible shots, and they ended up losing.
I did listen to the last about 4.5 minutes, and it was funny to hear the description from Jim Jones of some of the shots that were taken.
Oh, they were pretty terrible. They were really, really bad.
You got even on the radio, you got a very solid impression that that's what was going on.
And I mean, to be honest with you, I don't know what the end result's going to be. And I was firmly at the beginning of the season thinking that Love wasn't going to get traded. Now I think it's like 50-50 at this point. I think that they want to trade him, but they're not. I don't think they're going to be willing to give him up for peanuts. I really don't. I think the Cavs are just not in that kind of game. So I think
the question the Cavs are going to ask themselves is, if you look at what point in this contract does his value hit a peak, and at what point does it hit a valley? And, you know, as he continues to age and as he continues to maybe pile up more of these minor injuries that cause him to miss games, yeah, maybe his value isn't what you hoped it would be right now, but is his value going to be any higher a year and a half from now? You know, I don't think so. So I'm a little bit more, I don't know, you can term it however you want, depending on how you feel about Kevin Love, optimistic, pessimistic, that he's going to get traded. I'd put it at about 70-30. I think there's a 70% chance or so that he's gone. I think it's more than likely that he's going to be on another team, you know, come the February trading deadline.
Okay. All right.
So, we'll see. I mean, I don't know what's out there.
Right? February 8th is a trade deadline, so got a month.
We'll see what happens.
All right. So now we were going to talk a little bit about some teams we haven't spent as much time on this season. Let's start with the Oklahoma City Thunder, Mike. They're just playing really, really well. They have the best record in the NBA since Thanksgiving. I think I saw 15-5, something like that.
8-2 in their last 10, I know that.
8-2 in their last 10. Chris Paul had 20 points tonight in the fourth quarter in overtime to take his team to victory. All right, I got a fun trivia fact for you. So I was watching the game on NBA TV, okay? And they came up with the stat that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Dennis Schroeder, and Danilo Gallinari are the Thunder's three leading scorers, and they're all from outside the United States, okay? What was the last team to have their three leading scorers be from outside the United States? And I'll say that it's from
post the year 2000? I mean, it has to be,
yeah,
right?
It's within the last 10 years.
Within the last 10, okay. Well,
I don't have a year on it. I just know.
All right. Okay, I got to think through this.
I'm going to even go as far as I think it's within the last 5 years, Mike.
The last 5 years.
Yeah, it has right, to be within the last.
Okay. Oh yeah. Okay. All right. So it's the Spurs, right?
No.
Well,
Eastern Conference. I'll give you Eastern Conference.
Okay, hold on. All right, let me go back to the standing. At some point the Spurs had to have it, right? Duncan is technically, you know, even though he's from the Virgin Islands, that's technically a U.S. territory. Yeah. So I was thinking of Duncan, Ginobili, and Parker. All right, so it's an Eastern Conference team. Let me think. Man.
While you're thinking about it, I'll just say I think that the Thunder are in a very interesting position just because Presti just seems to continue to reload and somehow make a team that – just trades their best players away. I mean, he traded their best two players away, got some really good pieces back, and seemingly they're still competing. And I just think it's amazing, absolutely amazing that year after year, they just seem to figure it out, not to mention the fact that they continue to just, you know, have other assets that are in the wings that they can use and get their team better. So I just find that I think Presti, if the Thunder make the playoffs, which I think they're kind of, he's got to be considered for executive of the year at this point again, because I think who knew that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was going to be this good? I'll be honest. I mean, he's just played
there was a lot of thought. I mean, that, you know, his rookie year last year, there were a lot of people that came out of that very, very high on him. I think I'm looking at the roster right now. You know, Schroeder has kind of what's the right word for his reputation? A spotty reputation. Let's put it that way.
Wait, you pointing to his hair, dude?
No, I'm just no. But all right, a spotty reputation. But Gilgeous-Alexander, I think the consensus was that he was a potential NBA All-Star coming out of last season. Now, not that he was going to be an All-Star this season, but that was where his career potentially could be headed. So people were very high on him. Gallinari, we know what he is. I mean, that guy is a solid pro. He's a guy who can shoot it. No surprise that he's playing well. Steven Adams is what he is. I mean, he's a physical guy. He's going to rebound. He's going to score a little bit for you. He's going to play physical defense. Is he as good maybe as he was in 2015 or 2016? Probably not. But again, still a quality NBA player. And then the unknown was, where's Chris Paul going to be in terms of his health, in terms of, I think more people question what's his motivation to come into Oklahoma City, where he's been in Houston the last 2 years. And yeah, maybe he wasn't happy with James Harden after a certain period of time, which who can blame him? But, you know, they were contending for championships. And now he's in this situation. He gets traded to the Thunder, where clearly they're not going to compete for a championship. And so I think people wondered, what Chris Paul were you going to get? And as a result of that, you know, you've gotten, instead of a guy who maybe is not given his all, you've gotten a guy who's gone almost completely the other way. And he's become a mentor to Gilgeous-Alexander. He's played really, really well. I mean, he's averaging, you know, 16 and 6.5 assists. He's playing 32 minutes a game. He's been really, really good. And then they've had some guys that, you know, they found on the bench that are, I think, better than, you know, what they've thought. Nerlens Noel is contributing. They got Baisley, who is a rookie who's having, you know, a pretty decent rookie year for a guy who was drafted near the back end of the first round. I think he's going to end up having a pretty good career in the NBA. Terrence Ferguson has been good. So they've got some pieces that will, I think, enable them to make the playoffs. And like we talked about before, that back end of the Western Conference, once you get past, you know, before we were kind of roping Oklahoma City Thunder with the rest of that group, and they're the one team that seems to have separated themselves from the rest of that bottom of the Western Conference. So
yep.
I still think that if Dallas stays fully healthy, and, you know, I know Porzingis is out right now, he's been out a couple games, but assuming that he comes back, I think Dallas is going to be able to hold on if Luka continues to play at the level he's been. Dallas is going to hold on to one of those top six spots, and, you know, Oklahoma City settles in at seven if they continue to play well and don't have an injury. Again, Chris Paul could go down. I mean, anybody could, but
yeah.
Chris Paul could go down at any point. If he does, you know, they're right back in the pack with all those other teams.
You want to know those three players, Mike?
I do. I have nothing.
Orlando Magic.
Okay, give me – all right, just give me one guy.
I'll give you the easy one, Vucevic. Okay.
All right, so I'm trying to think who else has been a foreign player. I have no idea.
Evan Fournier.
All right.
And Serge Ibaka.
All right.
That's a good nugget right there, isn't it?
That is very good. That is very good. I was completely stumped on that one. I had nothing.
There you go. I apologize for the trivia. I saw it.
It's all good.
I got it for you because I wanted to ask you because I knew you hadn't watched the game. So
you're educating me and you're educating our audience. Thank you.
There you go. Perfect. No problem. All right. So what was the other team we wanted to talk about? Oh, Memphis
two more. Memphis Grizzlies. Right? Yeah, let's talk Grizzlies, and then we talk a little Jazz, so, too.
I will tell you, everyone had the Grizzlies like the bottom of the West. I think you and I concluded, right? I mean, I think I had them barely better than Phoenix when we, and obviously that was wrong, too. And, you know, I think a lot of things come into play when we talk about this, because obviously Golden State's injured and depleted, and New Orleans is in that kind of same situation. So, you know, when we would think about this, I think we would originally have thought that those teams would obviously be ahead of them, and then we would be talking about, you know, Phoenix, Memphis, possibly Minnesota would be the teams in the bottom, and then here we are, Memphis Grizzlies, a half game out of the playoffs. Ja Morant has been the real deal. There was a movie put on tonight, Mike, and I know you probably didn't see it, but there's a move that he put on the defender tonight and completely shook and just got an easy layup because of it. It's just he's definitely, in my opinion, right now, I think he's probably the rookie of the year, although I don't know. You know, at the beginning of the year, a lot of people were talking about, like, Tyler Hero and I'm trying to think who the other guy.
Oh, it's got to be Morant.
It's got to be Morant, because no one expected Memphis to even have any chance of making the playoffs.
I mean, Morant, two things about Morant. One, we said going into the draft last year and kind of heading into this season that the one skill beyond his athleticism, which we'll talk about in a second, but the one clear skill that he had was his ability to pass the ball. And he's averaging he's about 6.5 assists, and he's been everything as advertised as a passer. He's been everything as advertised as an athlete. He's had several unbelievable highlight moments this season, dunking over guys, and he's just super quick, and he's been everything. I think if you're Memphis, he's been everything that you would have hoped for. He has a dynamic game that people are going to love watching for years and years and years, and any guy who's as gifted of a passer as he is always fun to watch. So, yeah, I mean, I think he, at this point, is clearly the rookie of the year. Pulling up the stats for the Grizzlies, I didn't realize, because I've looked at some box scores of the Grizzlies here and there, mostly to check on Morant, but Jaren Jackson, I did not realize Jaren Jackson was averaging almost 18 points a game. Now, he's only grabbing five rebounds.
Wait, who traded him to Memphis for peanuts again, Mike? Wasn't it Phoenix?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure he was on Phoenix.
And No. You're on the wrong guy. You're on the wrong guy.
Oh no. Bad. You're on
Josh Jackson.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Come on, okay. Man. Jaren Jackson's the. All right, you threw me off for a second there. Jaren Jackson's from Michigan State. Josh Jackson is from Kansas. But okay.
That's impressive.
So he's averaging seven. He's averaging 17 a game, although he's only averaging five rebounds, which is a little disturbing for a guy who's 6'11". But regardless, the other guy that they got in the draft that ended up being a steal, and because I know he was drafted in the 20s, is Brandon Clark from Gonzaga, and he's averaging 12.5 and about six rebounds a game, and he's been really, really good. And that guy's athletic and bouncy, and so they just have a lot of guys that are contributing, and they've been, I think, a huge surprise. I mean, I don't think, as we said right off the top of, you know, our discussion about the Grizzlies, neither of us thought, and most experts across, you know, the NBA landscape did not think that this team was going to be good. So, kudos to the Grizzlies. And you know, I think there's a decent chance that if they stay healthy, who knows? They're right there. Depending on what San Antonio decides to do, does San Antonio trade Aldridge or trade DeRozan? And if they do they drop out? And again, it's not like San Antonio is good, so they could easily lose a couple in a row and Memphis could slide in there. I mean, Memphis is a team that, you know, you look at their young guys and that's a team that's certainly going to continue to push to try to make, you know, to try to make the playoffs. And then, you know, they have Iguodala sitting in their back pocket that they can trade and maybe, you know, pull some assets out of one of these top contenders. So Memphis
is
sitting in a pretty good spot.
Is there any chance that Iguodala decides to play for them at any point this season or no?
It doesn't seem like it. I mean, it seems like he's, even if he wanted to, I would have to think that he's burned quite a few bridges in the organization.
You're probably right.
He's basically not playing, so I would think not. But they've been fun, and I think they'll continue to be fun. All right, the last team to just touch on briefly in the West is the Jazz. and they're 9-1 in their last 10. They moved up into the 5 spot ahead of Dallas. Really, they've started playing better since they've shifted Donovan Mitchell back to the point since Conley's been out. And that's not to say that Conley's the root of their issues, but it does seem like they're better when Donovan Mitchell is playing the point and has the ball in his hands more. Bogdanovich has been a solid second scorer. Ingles is finally coming around and playing a little bit better.
Jordan Clarkson?
Clarkson has helped them. There's no question about that. He's, you know, we talk about, and I've said it before, that the Jazz, the reason why they've struggled in the playoffs is because they just don't have a secondary creator, secondary playmaker, a secondary guy that can create their own shot to take the burden off Mitchell. And he wasn't ready in his first 2 years to be the guy who, like we talked about earlier in the show, you know, you need somebody who's going to take over for those 4-minute stretches. And he just wasn't ready to do that in a playoff atmosphere last year. Now, maybe he will be this year. Maybe he will be at some point. But the fact is that he's a small guard, and I think he needs help, even though when he's playing the point. So they've been playing better. Just like we talked about with Philly and Milwaukee, their ultimate, you know, the ultimate judgment on Utah is not going to come in the regular season. It's going to come in the playoffs. And so I still think if they can get a healthy Mike Conley back, you can stagger their minutes. You can alternate which one of them has the ball and which one of them spotting up, because they can both play off the ball if necessary. But that's predicated on getting the Mike Conley that he's been for his entire career. If you get the Mike Conley that Utah saw for the first, you know, 15 or 20 games, that guy's not helping you. So I've always liked the Jazz. I think the Jazz are very, very good defensively. I think they're one piece away. Whether that one piece is Mike Conley getting right, or whether that's, I don't think there's anything out there really that they're going to be able to necessarily trade for, but I still think that they're one more guy away from being I don't know how legitimate they are, but I would not want to play them if you get Memphis Mike Conley and you put him with what they're doing right now. If I was the Lakers or the Clippers, I wouldn't necessarily be excited to see the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I'll be completely honest when I say I've watched, like, very few Utah Jazz games this year, and I think it's just because it's not really on TV much. And the only game that I watched was Clarkson's first game, and I just instantly saw, like, obviously he had zero practice time with them other than shoot around. And I think that he, bravado and all, he can just go out there and just, he'll just fill the bucket up if he can. And that's something that they needed, I feel, with, especially with how, you know, they just needed someone else to score. And, you know, obviously he's not going to be someone that you want to have to rely on every single game, but he's definitely someone that in one game in the playoffs, you know that he's going to go out there and score 25 points. You just know there's a game that might come, and that could be the difference between winning a series and not, just having one game where he scores a whole bunch of points for you.
He's the irrational heat check guy.
He loves to shoot, Mike.
He loves to shoot. He's not looking to pass. He comes in, he's looking to score. And that could be the perfect role for him in Utah, because I think that's exactly what they want him to do. And he's been good for them so far, and I think he'll continue to be good for them.
Yeah.
Is he going to be consistent over the course of, you know, a long playoff run? Maybe not, but could he be a guy who could swing a playoff game by scoring 25 points for you? Yeah, I think he could. So, you know, as long as you're not relying on him as one of your starters, but he's a guy who you bring him in, and if he's got the hot hand, you ride him, and if he doesn't have the hot hand, you bring him out, then yeah, I think he can be a valuable piece of a good team.
All right. Next thing that we want to talk about is Carmelo, right? Is that the next thing? Is that the next
thing? Sure, we can talk Carmelo's game.
So tonight, Carmelo, Portland Trailblazers, playing at Toronto. Toronto had the game in hand, Mike, and I didn't catch most of it because it wasn't on, but I was, you know, they were pulling in on NBA TV here and there, and they were pulling in some different things, and, you know, I saw Toronto was up 12 points at some point in the third quarter, fourth quarter, and then for whatever reason, they just went crazy. Dame hit an awesome three-pointer. Kind of reminded me of the three-pointer he hit against. That was Denver, right? Last year, or was it Utah? Am I getting them confused?
No, the one that he hit over Paul George, Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City, thank you. Yeah, it was very reminiscent of that. They tied the game at 99. They got a defensive stop, and then they come down the floor, and obviously they did a live look-in because it was like the last possession of the game, and they give Carmelo the ball at the top, and like the top, elbow extended, three-point line. He does his patented four dribbles to the middle of the key, shoots a two-pointer, because that's what he shoots. Shoots a two-pointer from just outside the key, elbow extended, and hits the game winner with 3.3 seconds left. And I was like, Carmelo, yes, I'm so excited that you made that shot. And I thought it was awesome, and then they got a stop, and they ended up winning the game. So Carmelo got to get a game winner this year, Mike.
Hey, we talked about it when he first signed, that what was he going to give him? What difference could Carmelo Anthony make? Could he make a difference? And I don't know that you can argue that he's made a tremendous difference in their standing in the league. I mean, it's not like since they've gotten him, they've been on fire, because that is not true. But, you know, we said, did we think he could keep up his production from his first three or four games? And, you know, so now he's 22 games into his Portland career, and he's averaging 16-6. Which, for a guy you signed off the street, is a pretty good production.
Yep, I agree. You could say that they haven't been on fire, but I think they've definitely won probably three or four more games than they would have won if he wasn't on their team.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, that's fair. I just, you know, again, Portland's going to be a team that's interesting heading into the trading deadline. You know, you're approaching the halfway point of the season, and they're sitting at 16-22. Now, are they going to have a chance to compete for that eighth spot? Sure. But for a team that I think came into the season thinking that they would have a shot at getting to the NBA Finals, has to be pretty disappointing with where they're sitting. So do they sell, or do they wait and say, hey, we're going to try to hold on? Do they try to deal for Kevin Love? Say, hey, if we can get one more guy in here, whether that's Love or somebody else, and you combine that with Carmelo, you combine that with the return of Nurkic, and, you know, come March 15th, this could be a totally different team with a completely different look.
Yeah.
And, you know, at least two or three different roster spots that are, you know, completely change the complexion of what they are and who they are and what their ceiling might be. So I see Portland still trying to be a buyer, simply because they know they've got Nurkic coming back in their back pocket, and if they can add one more piece, they got to believe that if you look at the experience and the talent on their roster compared to the teams that they're competing against, other than the Spurs, Portland's clearly the most experienced and has the best guys who have had success both in the regular season and the playoffs. So, you know, again, if they get healthy, I think you'd have to figure that, you know, of those teams that are down there at the bottom, I'd probably favor Portland to creep back up into that A spot. If I was a betting man right now, that's the team I would bet on to probably get to the eighth seed, even though I predicted them before the season to miss the playoffs. But, you know, a couple of my teams that I liked are down near the bottom, in the Kings and the Pelicans. So, oh well on that one.
Yep, I agree.
All right.
Anything else?
Yeah, let's talk. We didn't talk about this in our pre-show discussion, but NBA All-Star voting. So I don't know if you can pull that up. I have it in front of me right now.
I'll pull it up.
So I think that there's, you know, it's a fairly solid fan vote at this point. So if you start in the West, so your three Western Conference front court starters, LeBron, solid. Anthony Davis, solid. Number three, Kawhi, solid. If those are your three starters, if those are the three people that the fans vote in, I'd say the fans have gotten it right.
Yep.
I mean, I look down that list, and I don't know that there's anybody on that list that I would say deserves to be an all-star starter ahead of any of those three. Now, there's some all-stars still to be had, obviously, in terms of reserves, but there's nobody below those three guys that I would slide up into one of their spots. Okay. The only argument you can make is against Kawhi, because, you know, he sat out so many games, and maybe you make an argument that somebody below him deserves it. But I think those are your three guys in the Western Conference front court. I think the fans have it right there.
Yep.
Western Conference guards, one is Luka, two is James Harden.
Can't disagree. Steph Curry's four. What a joke.
I mean, again, a testament to Steph's popularity with kids and fans.
Listen,
you know, throughout the league,
I'm putting my hat in the ring for Alex Caruso, Mike.
Hey, he's at number eight with a bullet, man. Number eight with a bullet. He's headed up to number two anytime. No, again, that's the right starting lineup for the Western Conference. Those are the five guys that A, deserve it, and I think those are the five guys that fans would want to see. So kudos to the fans in the Western Conference.
We're not gonna say as good of things about the Eastern Conference, Mike.
No. So the Eastern Conference. All right, let's take a look at the Eastern Conference front court. Giannis 1, sure. Embiid 2, okay. Sure. Siakam 3.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard. I know with him not playing right now, it kind of puts a little bit of a. But I think it's hard to argue that he doesn't at least deserve a consideration. I don't know.
Well, look at that. Okay, so it's always the statement of if not him,
then who?
So
Taco
we look
Fall?
At. Yeah, how about Taco getting up there at number six?
What the heck is going on there?
That's pretty
He's
good.
Played in three games.
All right, so let's discount Taco. Let's discount that one. So 4, Jimmy Butler, 5, Tatum, 7, Adebayo, 8, Hayward, 9, Drummond, 10, Sabonis. I think of those guys. I think Butler and Sabonis are the next two most deserving guys that you would think about replacing Siakam with. And
sorry, foreign white guy from that plays for the Pacers is not going to be a starter in the Eastern.
No,
Conference.
He's not. No, I agree. He's not going to be a starter. I think probably Siakam is the likely choice. Although I could see where Butler could take that spot. They're basically there's a lot of similarities between the two of them, and that they're both pretty good defenders. Neither one of them is a great shooter. They both were kind of under the radar guys coming into the league, so they have very similar career paths. If I was picking right now, I might lean towards Butler simply because of the success that the Heat has had, although the Raptors have also obviously had a good season. But the fact that Siakam's injured right now, I might lean towards Butler for that spot, but I would not have any problem with Siakam taking that third spot.
I agree. All right, now let's this guards thing here, Mike. This is ugly. In my opinion,
this is really ugly. You know, so one is Trae Young, two is Kyrie Irving. So, I mean, again, Kyrie's popular. Again, testament to his popularity that he's number two, but in no way, shape, or form is he an all-star, whether as a starter or as a reserve this year. There's no case to be made for him at all.
Yep.
Trae Young, offensively, if you just look at his offensive stats, is probably deserving of being an all-star from a statistical standpoint. But then you look at
the record,
the record of his team, and you look at the fact that, like we talked about last week, basketball is a two-way sport. You don't get to play just offense or just defense. And Trae, unfortunately, at this point is strictly an offensive player. And so do you reward that? Do you reward that as an Eastern Conference All-Star? To me, I would say the answer is no. So if I look
in the All-Star game, they don't really play defense, right?
True. That's true. Trae Young would be a fun guy to watch in an All-Star game because defense doesn't matter. He's going to take long shots. He's a fantastic passer. So he would be a guy who would be fun to have in the game, but he's not deserving of being an Eastern Conference All-Star guard starter. To me, it gets tough. I think Kemba's got to be one of the starters.
I agree. I think Kemba has to be a starter. And I think that the next one's really – you're gonna cringe when I say this, Mike. I think if I'm looking at the rest of the list, okay, Derrick Rose, Detroit's terrible. Zach LaFine, Chicago's not really that good.
No.
Ben Simmons has, I mean, sure, he's been okay, but I don't think he's been great. I think Kyle Lowry is the next deserving player, Mike.
How many games is I'm curious how many games has Lowry played? Let me just pull up. Let me pull his Kyle stats. So where's the season? So the season he's played 25 games for the Raptors.
Okay, well maybe he hasn't played enough games then. Okay.
So he's missed so he's missed 12 games. This season he is averaging his points. Oh, there it is.
The Knicks just got their second flagrant foul of the game. Reggie Bullock just basically tackled JaVale McGee. There you go, Mike.
Nice, nice. All right, so Lowry's averaging 21-7 for a Raptors team that has been a really, really pleasant surprise. I think you can make a pretty good case for him that based on the success of the Raptors, the unexpected success that they've had, that Lowry's been a key component of that. It's just a matter of how much do you value the fact that he's missed that many, you know, he's missed that many games.
I think Jaylen Brown wouldn't probably be a terrible. I don't think Jaylen Brown has had as good a season as Lowry, but Bradley Beal definitely. I don't think because he's been injured and.
So here's Beal's averaging almost 28 a game.
How many games has he missed?
He's played 31.
Okay, so he's played more than Lowry. Okay.
Yeah, so he's played 31 games. The Wizards are 12-24. So he's missed, what would that make it? He's missed five games. So not insignificant, but not significant enough to, I'd say, rule him out. He's averaging almost 5 rebounds a game. The Wizards have been surprisingly competent. I mean, they're 12-24, so it's not like the Wizards are good, but he's been surprisingly competent. I'm not ready to make Jaylen Brown an all-star. To me, the last spot, it's almost a coin flip between Simmons and Beal. I like Simmons. I like what he does. I think the kind of passing that he's capable of doing is undervalued from him as a player, and he's also a menace on the defensive end of the floor. I mean, you look at every other guy on this list, and I guess Jaylen Brown would be considered a good defender. Lowry at times be a good defender. Nobody else on that list is really known as being a great defender. So for me, I think it's got to be Kemba, and then if I was splitting hairs, I don't know. I'd probably put Simmons in there. With just a tiny, tiny edge over Beal, but you could convince me that Beal is deserving. You could also convince me that Lowry is deserving. So yep. To me, those are my top four Eastern Conference guards, depending on how the roster ends up shaking out. But
Colin Sexton didn't make this list.
He is not on the list anywhere. So apparently, the rat tail is not as popular as he would like to believe.
Yep. Oh well.
All right, I don't know if there's anything else that we didn't touch on that is big news or interesting that's happened. The Michael Porter Jr. arrival in Denver, that he's getting more minutes, is interesting.
Yeah, you mentioned that at the last minute here. Bueller would be very upset if we did not. So,
well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think, again, that guy, when you watch him play out on the floor, he looks like he could be a very, very interesting piece for the Nuggets moving forward. Question will just be, you know, his health and where they are. And the Nuggets are an interesting team. We talked about them a little bit last week. What's their ceiling? Are they good enough that they can beat the Lakers or the Clippers in a 7-game series? I don't know. I mean, Jokic obviously stepped up in the playoffs last year, so maybe he does it again. But
yep.
I don't know. I don't think they're good enough to beat either of the LA teams when push comes to shove in the playoffs. I think they're still one piece away. And I don't know that even as good as Porter's potential is, I don't know that he's good enough this year to fill that role that they need in order to push them over the top against one of those two LA teams. So, yep. But Denver's going to be fun to watch. I mean, they're certainly a fun team, and Jokic is always fun. All the things that he does are very interesting. So,
yep.
All right, I think we are done for today. We've covered a lot of different things. NBA, So thanks to everyone out there for listening. We appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.